Brethren, how do you wake up in the morning? How do you wake up in the morning? Yeah, I know most of us are thinking, yeah, with a big mug of coffee or something like that, right? No, but what wakes you up? What is your wake-up call? Do you set alarm clocks? Well, we do in our house. We have a series of alarm clocks. One's not enough. The first one starts at 6 o'clock in the morning. 6 o'clock in the morning, and it's the sound of a lot of birds tweeting away in the background. And it's a beautiful, gentle kind of, you know, hello, Derek and Denise, time to wake up type of a feeling that we get from that. And usually, we ignore it. It kind of wakes us up anyway. It does the trick. And about 15 minutes later, Denise has something that's a little bit more sharp, you know, beep, 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 beep. It's a little bit more annoying that you've actually got to do something about. So we stagger out of bed and grab our coffee, and then we go through to the lounge, and we sit down. And at 6:33, the sound of a harp goes off. That's our third alarm. 6:33. Let's turn to Matthew 6:33. Because you're probably wondering, 6:33? Why 33? That's a strange number to put into your alarm. Well, what does Matthew 6:33 say? So let's turn there. Matthew 6:33. says, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be yours as well. All these things shall be yours as well. Well, what's the all? Well, in the previous verses, he's talking about, you know, have no anxious thought, you know, in verse 25. Don't be anxious about your life or what you'll eat, what you'll drink, about your body, what you put on. Is life more than food, the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. Well, the 6 o'clock, you know, the birds sounding for us at 6 o'clock should get our minds onto, yeah, there's a lot of birds out there and they don't have to worry about anything. So it starts getting us in the frame of mind. You know, end of verse 26, it says, are you not more valuable than they are? Each of us can ultimately become a child of God. We can become members of the God family. God sees enormous value in each of us. And that's often through the knocks of life and everything, we get knocked down and beaten down, and sometimes we really develop a very low image, low self-esteem of ourselves, and we think, what value am I? Well, God sees huge value in you and me. God sees massive value. And he says, don't be anxious, verse 27. Which of you being anxious can add one cubit to the span of life? And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They don't toil or spin. They just grow, and they've got beautiful petals and leaves. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. And you know the story of Solomon. I mean, he was enormously blessed, but he also set out to get more riches, right? He did start really chasing after them. But God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into the oven. Will he not much more clothe you, O men of little faith? That's an important phrase, O men of little faith, because anxiety on the one hand, and then fear on the other, and then faith coming into the picture. Faith being the thing that drives us away from fear and anxiety into a situation of really peace in our hearts and our minds, knowing that our God is going to look after us and that we don't have to get totally encumbered by all the cares of this life, because He will sort it out at the end of it. But you know, the whole idea of a wake-up call is something that we constantly need. I mean, if I don't set my alarm, I'm not going to wake up. You know, I'm going to sleep till whenever. I'm not going to wake up. It's something I've got to have on a daily basis. If I'm going to get out of bed, I've got to have a wake-up call. And I think, in a lot of our lives, I think it's similar. It's similar. We need a wake-up call. And God is very gracious. He gives us wake-up calls. He teaches us what to do, how to live. We say, yes, we're going to do it. We step out and we start doing it. But we're human beings. And we get distracted. We get tired. And we let things slip. And God lets us go our merry way for a while, but every now and then He gives us a wake-up call. And that wake-up call sometimes can be quite dramatic. Quite dramatic. Just recently, I had a third wake-up call, big wake-up call in my life. The previous two wake-up calls, the one happened probably in my, as I moved from 39 to 40, around about that age. Sudden, huge wake-up call, lying in the hospital, my heart going crazy for 4 days, all the doctors trying to figure out what's going on with this guy and how can we get him back into rhythm. And then I did it again, you know, and as if once wasn't enough. And then again, just recently, a similar kind of scenario happened. And it was, you know, in that third one that I really thought, okay, how many times does God have to send me a wake-up call before I get the message? And the message is, don't get so wrapped up with stuff and things that you forget that, oh, you know what? I probably didn't have a terribly balanced life yesterday, or the day before, or the day before, or the day before. Actually, probably for the last 3 to 6 months, I probably didn't have a terribly balanced life on a daily basis. I wasn't getting enough sleep. I wasn't getting exercise. I wasn't getting enough prayer. I wasn't getting enough meditation. I was getting too busy. And God, in His mercy, intervened and sent me a wake-up call. Now you could say, well, Derek, you know, if you've got this Matthew 6:33 going on every morning to remind you of the verse which says, seek first His kingdom, and all those other things that you bothered about will be added, then how come? Well, I'm human. I'm human, and I'm still trying to learn how to be a better human being. I wonder if some of you might have similar kinds of stories to tell. Maybe not exactly the same, but something similar where you found yourself as well needing a wake-up call and getting a wake-up call. God is merciful in that He sends those wake-up calls. He sends it to us individually. He sends it to nations as well. I think we can see in our nation's history right here how there have been a number of wake-up calls. 9/11, bang, hello America. You've left your God. Come back. You know, I think we've seen that down through the ages. All the different the tribes of Israel, as they spread out and migrated around the world, they've all had wake-up calls. Very often, as nations, just as individuals, we stick our fingers in our ears and we say, I don't want to hear the wake-up call. I don't want to hear it. I just want to keep doing my stuff. That's the story of humanity, isn't it? That's the story of humanity. But, you know, the Bible, as we know, the Bible is the instruction manual for human beings. And this is a very important instruction. It's a wake-up call and it's an instruction of Matthew 6:33 that we've read. Seek first his kingdom, because if you seek first his kingdom, everything else that you're worried about, it'll happen. You'll get to it. You'll get to it when it needs to be gotten to. Seeking first the kingdom is the daily reset button that we need. The daily reset button. Now, some people think of the day, which is actually more correct, as starting at sundown and running to sundown the next day. So a lot of people think in terms of getting in their time with God in the evenings after sundown and starting the day, which runs into the next daylight period until sundown, in that way. Others, like me, still think in terms of, okay, it's dawn. This is the start of the day for me, and I need to get my head straight at that time. Whatever your situation is, it needs daily attention, because it's so easy, isn't it? I mean, we've got these things which constantly demand our attention, don't they? I mean, we've got to multitask with it as well. We're watching something happen, and we've got to watch this as well. You know, it's not enough to just watch one thing. We've got to watch millions of things at the same time. We're watching our children do something, the pets do something over there. We're checking to see if the dishwasher's finished its cycle. We're looking at this. We're listening to some music. We're looking out the window. Like a million things all at once. And everything is grabbing our attention. And before you know what, you look at your watch and you think, it's 6 o'clock at night already. What happened to the day? The day has gone. And I still haven't spent enough time dedicating my focus to reading a chapter out of the Bible, for example, and really pondering. So, you know, brethren, Jesus said to the people there, seek first. No matter what you've got on your agenda for a day, seek first. Seek God first. Seek God first. And that might be like a war cry for the day. When you wake up, what I'm trying to do now when I hear 6:33 go off, the wake-up call, I try to bring into my mind, seek God first. Just those three words, seek God first. And then get myself to go out with that as the war cry and actually act on it. Because we have a finite number of days on this earth. A finite number of days. And we're going to choose each day, what are we going to do? What are we going to put in the preeminent space for that specific day? I think most human beings have times when we get it and we do it right. And I think most of us have times we can look back and we can say, I didn't get it and I didn't do it right. My life wasn't as focused as it should be. One of the stories I love out of the Bible is the story of King Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat had a fascinating life. He didn't get it at first. He really didn't get it. Although he should have got it a little bit more than he actually did. But let's spend some time looking at his life. Let's look at the life of King Jehoshaphat, and let's see the progression to where he actually got to a point where he did get it and where he did seek God first. Because you see, this whole thing of seeking God first is not only that if you put God first in your life on a daily basis, everything else will happen, but it's more like, how will everything else happen? God will intervene in every single thing that happens after that point in time if you remain in that mindset all the way through the day. Because you see, putting God first, seeking him first, means that not only once a day you're going to seek him first. It means that you establish a pattern of behavior whereby every single moment of every single day you end up putting him first. And you end up asking him, God, what should I do in this situation? Because events, you know, we might have an agenda for a day. I'm going to do this, 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 and this, this day. Well, that's very nice. It's a plan. It's great to have a plan. But we all know what happens. You get a phone call from someone out of the blue. Something happens. Maybe your dishwasher breaks. Now you've got to all of a sudden get hold of, you know, attend to that in some way or another. You get a phone call from a friend. They need help. And before you know it, an hour of your day is gone because you've been on the phone talking to them. It means that some of the things on your agenda are gone. So life is unexpected. All these things that happen every single day are going to be unexpected. And during that time, you're going to find yourself getting distracted. God says in the pages of this book that we need to pray without ceasing. He says that through Paul, right? It's pray without ceasing. Be instant in prayer. Be with God all the time in our thoughts, so that whenever anything happens, we're immediately going to God and saying, I need your help. Help me to figure this out. Help me to do this right. Show me the lesson I need to learn in this situation. That's how all things are going to be added. Seeking first is important. It's the first step. It establishes a pattern so that everything that happens in that day is going to be done in according to God's will. And he's going to intervene in every single one of those things. So let's go to the life of King Jehoshaphat. Let's start looking at it in, chapter 15, just to get the backstory. Chapter 15 of 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles 15. So just to get the backstory here of who he was and who his father was, Jehoshaphat's dad was King Asa, A-S-A. So chapter 15, verse 17. And what Asa had done was he had started following God in a certain measure. Not all the way, but in a certain measure. Asa had started implementing God's way of life and getting getting people to start focusing on God. It says here, verse 17, but the high places were not taken out of Israel. Nevertheless, the heart of Asa was blameless all his days. And he brought into the house of God the votive gifts of his father and his own votive gifts, silver and gold and vessels. And there was no more war until the 35th year of the reign of Asa. So, Jehoshaphat would have grown up during this time, and he would have seen God's way being lived. He would have seen God's way of life being lived. But if we read through chapter 16, and we won't read every single verse, but we'll read enough just to get a flavor for what was going on. It says, in the 36th year, chapter 16 and verse 1, in the 36th year of the reign of Asa, Baasha, king of Israel, went up against Judah and built Ramah, that he might permit no one to go out or come in to Asa, king of Judah. Then Asa took silver and gold from the treasures of the house of the Lord and the king's house and sent them to Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, who dwelt in Damascus, saying, "Let there be a league between me and you and between my father and your father. Behold, I'm sending to you silver and gold. Go, break your league with Baasha, king of Israel, that he may withdraw from me." So see what's happening here. You've got Asa, who in the previous chapter was following God, was bringing gold and silver into the house of God, starting to do all the right things, but now all of a sudden he gets faced by his neighbor, the king of Israel, coming to fight him. And his neighbor has the king of Syria allied with him. So there's two armies coming down on King Asa. And he's like, okay, the only thing I can do is use human reasoning and say, I've got to break that bond between Baasha and the king of Israel. And the king of Syria and Ben-Hadad. Baasha and Ben-Hadad, we've got to break that because together they will destroy me. I can handle one of them, but I can't handle two. So what do? I go to the gold and silver that I've put in the house of God, and I send it as a bribe to the king of Syria, and I say, hey, just take all the gold and silver, but leave me alone and break your bond with the king of Israel. Don't attack me. Now, on face value, using human reasoning, that sounds like a logical thing to do, right? You can imagine Jehoshaphat, he's seeing all of this happen. He's seeing what's going on. And what do? You learn from examples of your parents. You think, my dad, he's been good. He's been following God's way. He's been building up and he's just defending, he's defending the kingdom. Well, it seems like it's not a bad idea what he's doing. So, Ben-Hadad? And verse 4 of chapter 16, and Ben-Hadad hearkened to King Asa and sent commanders of his armies against the cities of Israel. And they conquered all these cities in Israel. So in fact, Ben-Hadad didn't just break off and say, my armies aren't going to side with you against Judah. He said, okay, we'll actually do one step better. We'll go and fight, Israel. We'll go and take a bunch of Israelite cities. And when Baasha heard of it, he stopped building Ramah and let his work cease. So King Asa took all Judah and carried away the stones of Ramah and its timber, which Baasha had been building. And with them, he built Geba and Mizpah. So he grabbed all the building materials and went and fortified two of his cities. So you might have thought, that was a wise thing for him to do. Very clever move on his part. But of course, how does God look at it? How did God look at it? Later on in the chapter, Well, in verse 7, we read another part of the story. At that time, Hanani, the seer, came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, "Because you relied on the king of Syria and did not rely on the Lord your God, the army of the king of Syria has escaped you. Were not the Ethiopians and the Libyans a huge army with exceeding many chariots and horsemen? Yet because you relied on the Lord, he gave them into your hand. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro through the whole earth to show his might in behalf of those whose heart is blameless towards him. You've done foolishly in this, for from now on you will have wars." So remember, prior to this, there were no wars. There were no wars. God was protecting them. And God's specifically saying through the seer Hanani here, hey, you know, you got in God's way right here. God was going to destroy the army of Syria, Ben-Hadad's army. It was going to be destroyed. But because you jumped in, took control, took matters into your hand, that didn't work out too well, did it? In fact, he was victorious over Israel, and he returned stronger than ever to his land. So he's waiting for opportunities to come against you again in the future. If you'd let me handle it, if you'd sought my will, if you'd done a Matthew 6:33, life would have been different. But now, what is Asa's response to Hanani? Verse 10. Asa was angry with the seer and put him in stocks in prison for this, because he was in a rage. And Asa inflicted cruelties upon some of the people at the same time. He became a tyrant. His whole behavior pattern changed in his head. His heart changed. The acts of Asa from in verse 11, from first to last, are written in the book of the kings of Judah. In the 39th year of his reign, Asa was diseased in his feet, and his disease became severe. Even in his disease, he did not seek the Lord. Once again, it's like he didn't learn his lesson. God sent a wake-up call. He sent the armies. God sent another wake-up call. The disease, Asa, turn to me, return to me. Seek me first. But he didn't. He sought help from physicians. In verse 13, Asa slept with his fathers. He died. It's a nice way of saying Asa croaked. He didn't get it. And it's so sad when you look at the earlier part of his life. He got distracted in some way or another, and he didn't seek first the kingdom. He didn't seek God first. He sought his own wisdom when the armies came. And then he sought the wisdom of the physicians. He didn't seek God when he was sick. So then, who comes in next? Chapter 17, Jehoshaphat, his son, reigned in his stead. So now Jehoshaphat is the king of Judah. He placed forces in all the fortified cities of Judah, set garrisons in the land of Judah and in the cities of Ephraim, which Asa, his father, had taken. So these are cities that Asa had taken from Israel. The Lord was with Jehoshaphat because he walked in the earlier ways of his father. See, so his father's early part of his father's reign had made an impression on Jehoshaphat, and he was following that. He was seeking God. He did not seek, verse 3, second part of verse 3, it says, he did not seek the Baals. He wasn't looking after the gods of this world, but he sought the God of his father. Again, sought, seek, same word. Seek first the kingdom. Seek God first. He was seeking the God of his father and walked in his commandments, not according to the ways of Israel. Remember, Israel had gone completely off course, way before the kingdom of Judah went off course. King of Israel had really taken that nation, the 10 tribes, down the wrong road, way before. So verse 5, therefore the Lord established the kingdom of Judah, the two tribes, Judah and Benjamin, and all Judah brought tribute to Jehoshaphat, and he had great riches and honor. So things were going really well for Jehoshaphat. His heart was courageous in the ways of the Lord, and furthermore, he took the high places and the Asherim out of Judah. So he went a step further than his father had done. Now, so everything was going great for him. So picture this in, you know, the average day, as we were saying a little bit earlier. Average day, you get up in the morning and you think, I'm going to do this, 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 and this. And then all of a sudden, a whole bunch of things happen out of the blue and throws your day into turmoil. Well, this is a day on which Jehoshaphat's life gets thrown into turmoil. Verse 7, in the third year of his reign, he sent his princes, Ben-Hail, Obadiah, Zechariah, Nathaniel, Micaiah, to teach in the cities of Judah, and with them the Levites, etc. All of their names, not going to try and read them. And they taught in Judah, having the book of the law with them. And they went about all the cities of Judah, and they taught among the people. And the fear of God fell on the kingdom. So, at this point in time, everything's still going well. He's implementing the things that he knows are the right things, and he's putting God first. And the fear of the Lord fell on all the kingdoms of the lands that were around Judah, and they made no war. Verse 11, some of the Philistines brought Jehoshaphat presents and silver for tribute, and the Arabs also brought him 7,700 rams and 7,700 he-goats. And Jehoshaphat grew steadily greater. He built in Judah fortresses and store cities. Now he's got more and more things to distract him. I mean, it's good, right? He's being blessed, but there's more and more things going on that he's got to have a finger on all the time. He had great stores in the cities of Judah. He had soldiers, mighty men of valor. This was the muster of them by the fathers of their houses. And then he talks through all the different commanders that he had, the armies, the mighty men of valor. These were in the service of the king, verse 19, besides those whom the king had placed in the fortified cities throughout all of Judah. Do you think during this time he might have got a little distracted? He might have got a little distracted, because now in chapter 18, now Jehoshaphat had great riches and honor. What did he do? He made a marriage with Ahab. Who was Ahab? King of Israel. A bad guy. We know this guy's up to no good, this king. King Ahab. Why is he doing it? Well, you know, he looks at history and he says, history repeats itself. Maybe Israel's going to try and attack me at some point because of jealousies. Even though they're my brothers, they're going to get jealous. They've left God. I can no longer appeal to them as being, you know, your God and my God. We're all this, you know, we worship the same God. We don't have that in common anymore. At some point, they're probably going to attack me. So he does what many kings in those days used to do. He said, hey, king, you have a need for another wife, or maybe your sons have a need for a wife. I have a beautiful daughter. Let's arrange a marriage, and therefore we'll become closer to each other. So we'll arrange for a marriage. So he sets up and has a marriage relationship. Now, what does that do? That opens up the door for Ahab to say, Hey, Jehoshaphat, now since we're family, I've got this little war that I want to rage against a neighboring king. Wouldn't it be cool if you and your armies would kind of come over and join me so we can be victorious over this neighbor of mine? Jehoshaphat's opened the door for this kind of approach. Is it recorded anywhere here that he sought God's will about the marriage? Nope. Is it recorded anywhere here that he sought God's will about going to whether he should go and take his armies across there? Nope. Ah, but Derek, there is a little bit of a reference a little bit later on in these chapters where it talks about Jehoshaphat sitting in the court of the king of Israel and saying, let's inquire about what God's will is. Let's seek God. Well, let's look at that. But he didn't do it before he went there. You know, the point really is when Jehoshaphat was sitting in his palace, that would have been the time to seek God first. But he didn't. He said, okay, I've got to go across to King Ahab and go and sit in his court, listen to all his wise men giving him advice on how he must go and fight this neighboring king. So Jehoshaphat listens to all of the king's wise men, and then he says in verse 4, he says to king of Israel, inquire first. Seek you first. He's now giving Ahab advice that actually he should have taken himself. Inquire first for the word of the Lord. Then the king of Israel gathered the prophets together, 400 men, and says to them, shall we go to battle against Ramoth Gilead, or shall I forbear? And they say, go up, for the Lord will give it to the hand of the king. Jehoshaphat knew that these 400 men were not prophets of God. They were not following God anymore because Israel had left God. So in verse 6 he says, is there not another prophet of the Lord whom we may inquire this of? And the king of Israel said, there's yet one man by whom we may inquire the Lord, Micaiah, the son of Imlah, but I hate him, for he never prophesies good concerning me, but always evil. So it turns out there's one remaining prophet. Those 400 other ones have all left the faith, and they're just saying whatever the king wants. So Micaiah comes out, and they ask him the question, should we go up? The king of Israel says, bring Micaiah in verse 8. Let's pick it up here. Verse 12, let's jump down there. The messenger who went to summon Micaiah said to him, behold, the words of the prophets with one accord are favorable to the king. Let your word be the same, you know. So if you want to be in the king's good books, just go along with the other 400. Micaiah, of course, answers in a kind of an interesting way initially. In middle of verse 14, Micaiah responds, he says, go up and triumph. They'll be given to your hand. But he does it in a kind of a sarcastic way. But the king says to him, how many times shall I adjure you that you speak to me nothing but the truth in the name of the Lord? And he said, this is Micaiah talking now, I saw all of Israel scattered on the mountains as sheep that have no shepherd. And the Lord said, these have no master. Let each return to his home in peace. The king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, did I not tell you that he would not prophesy good according to me, but evil? Well, he's prophesied the truth. You don't want to hear the truth. But you know, in spite of all of this, even though Jehoshaphat hears Micaiah's testament that this is not going to go well if you go up, he still goes up. He goes up with the king of Israel. Verse 28 of verse 18. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Israel, went up to Ramoth-Gilead. King of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, I'll disguise myself and go into battle, but you wear your robes. The king of Israel disguised himself, went into battle. King of Syria commanded the captain of the chariots, fight with neither small nor great, but only the king of Israel. And we know the story here. He charges after Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat cries out. They realize Jehoshaphat's not the king of Israel. But at the end, Ahab catches an arrow. Ahab catches a stray arrow. He gets caught in the crossfire. And Ahab eventually dies. And Jehoshaphat retreats, returns to the safety of his house in Jerusalem in verse 1 of chapter 29. You think about all that tribulation that Jehoshaphat went through with his armies. Never once did he seek first. He told Ahab to seek first. And isn't that a human thing to do as well? So often we can see our faults in others and we say, we're very quick with advice. Oh, you need to seek God first. And then we think, oops, I didn't seek God first in this situation. See, we get so distracted. We get so distracted. But the good news is that Jehoshaphat learned his lessons. He learned some great lessons. He had time now to reflect on what had just happened. He had time to piece things together, to think back to his father as well. Man, my father started out so well, and then it just didn't end well. He wasn't seeking God first. And he probably thought to himself, you know, I told Ahab to seek God first, and I didn't do it. And things didn't work out too well. So, forward fast some time, and Jehoshaphat's now sitting in his palace, and he thinks he's about to have a great day. And on this particular day, he's probably in the right frame of mind, because we see what unfolds here in the story chapter 20. He's now in the right frame of mind. Word suddenly comes to him. Verse 1 of chapter 20. After this, the Moabites and the Ammonites, and with them some of the Meunites, came against Jehoshaphat for battle. Some men came and told Jehoshaphat, a great multitude is coming against you from Edom, from beyond the sea. And behold, they are in Hazazon Tamar, that is in Gedi today. It's called in Gedi. Then Jehoshaphat feared and set himself to seek the Lord. First thing he did, seek the Lord. Seek God first. He hears three armies are coming down. He doesn't suddenly think, you know, think about that in today's terms. You know, you're sitting there with your cell phone, you know, and you hear three armies are coming. So you get onto Google and say, what do I do when I got three armies coming down? You know, or who can I contact? You know, I go through my contact list and who can I phone to send reinforcements? You know, he would have had his own distractions, right? He could have done all sorts of other things, but he didn't. He didn't do anything like that. The very first thing he did was seek God first. He got the message. Seek God first. A great multitude came, and he feared, and he set himself to seek the Lord. And he proclaimed a fast throughout all of Judah, and Judah assembled to seek help from the Lord. So he led by example. He got the whole of Judah to do the same as he did. He said, follow me, I'm your leader, I'm your king. This is what we need to do as a nation. We need to seek God first. All the cities of Judah, they came to seek the Lord. Verse 5, he stood in the assembly of Judah in Jerusalem at the house of the Lord, and he said, and this is really telling how he puts this across. He says, O Lord God of our fathers, are you not the God in heaven? Do you not rule over all the kingdoms and the nations? In your hand of power and might, so that none is able to withstand you. Didn't you, O God, drive out the inhabitants of this land before your people Israel and give it forever to the descendants of Abram, your friend? And they've dwelt in it and have built sanctuary for your name, saying, if evil comes upon us, the sword of judgment, pestilence, famine, we'll stand before the house and before you, for your name is in this house, and cry to you in the affliction, in our affliction, and you'll hear and save. You see what he's doing? He's going right back to when the temple was dedicated by Solomon. And he called on God and asked exactly this. In fact, these words are almost verbatim out of parts of Solomon's prayer. And now behold the men of Ammon and Moab and Mount Seir, whom you would not let Israel invade when they came from the land of Egypt, and whom they avoided and did not destroy. Behold, they reward us by coming to drive us out of the land, out of the possession which you've given us to inherit. O our God, will you not execute judgment upon them? See, he's looking to God to do it. He's not saying, well, I've got all these armies. I mean, in the previous chapters, we saw he's got armies, substantial armies that have built up. He's got wealth. He's got, you know, weapons. He's got the whole thing. He's equipped to go and take them on, but he's not looking to his own power. He's saying, oh God, will you not execute judgment on them? For we are powerless against this great multitude that's coming against us. And this is the important verse. We do not know what to do. We do not know what to do, but our eyes are on you because we're seeking God first. We're seeking God first. And what's absolutely amazing through the rest of the story, how it unfolds. Jehoshaphat was expecting an answer from God. He asked with boldness. He said, I don't know what to do. And our eyes are on you. We're expecting an answer from you. And see what happens right away. Verse 14, the Spirit of the Lord came on Jehaziel, the son of Zechariah, the son of Benaiah, the son of Jael, the son of Mattaniah, Levites of the sons of Asaph in the midst of the assembly. So that's all the guy's title, right? It's his credentials. Bottom line is Jehaziel, right? Jehaziel jumps up like split second after Jehoshaphat has finished praying, and he says, hearken all Judah and inhabitants of Israel and King Jehoshaphat, thus says the Lord. In effect, he jumps up and says, King, I've got an answer for you. God's just given me an answer. I mean, split second later, after that prayer, after Jehoshaphat seeking God first, saying, I don't know what to do, God. Being humble, immediately an answer comes. The answer is, fear not, be not dismayed at this great multitude, for the battle is not yours, but it's God's. God's going to take this. God's going to take this. Tomorrow, go down with them. Behold, they'll come up to the ascent of Ziz. You will find them in the end of the valley, east of the wilderness of Jeruel. You will not need to fight in this battle. Take your position. Stand still and see the victory of the Lord on your behalf. Now that phrase, stand still and see the Lord. See what God's going to do. That's echoed a number of times in the Bible, isn't it? That's the Israelites got their back to the Red Sea. The Egyptians are charging. Moses says, stand still and see what God's going to do. Here again, stand still, see what God's going to do. Fear not, be not dismayed. Tomorrow go out against them and the Lord will be with you. That's why you don't fear, because the Lord's going to do it. It's his battle. It's not your battle. If you seek God first, that's what happens. That's what happens. God intervenes. That's what he wants to do. He's got a greater purpose. See, when we don't seek him, when we take our own advice or someone else's advice, we call a friend and say, hey, what would you do in this situation? And we listen to them, or we get onto Google and we say, what do I do in this situation? Or look up some book somewhere and say, this is what the book says I've got to do. Well, then we get in God's way because he's got a plan. Things happen in our lives because God has a plan for us. We meet people on a daily basis in our lives because God puts them into our lives for a reason, for us, for our good and for their good. He's working with each of us individually every day. And what we want to do really is get out of the way so that he can actually do what he wants to do in our lives every day. And if we seek God first, we get out of his way, and every day is going to work out according to his purpose for us, his will for us. The rest of the story is fascinating as well, because they get up the next morning and they head out towards the spot where all of this drama is going to play out, and these huge armies have arrived on the scene. And as they're marching out, the singers and the praise worship team is out in front. They're singing praises to God. You know, the church choir, if you like, is in front of the army. They're marching out to this massive army. They've got their army, the king's there, but in front of them, they're singing praises to God. Wow. If we start each day seeking God's name, seeking him first, praising him, and we keep marching that way through the day, praising him, exalting him, giving thanks to him. Wow. And of course, the three opposing armies decide to start getting confused and start killing each other, and they wipe themselves out. And literally, nothing has to be done from the armies of Judah. They just stand and watch, literally stand still and see the victory of the Lord on your behalf, O Judah and Jerusalem, because they sought God first. They sought God first. So brethren, as you start your day, if you start your day, whether you start it at sundown for the next day, or you start it in the morning for that daylight hours in the evening of that day, however you do it, whether you use an alarm clock or a cannon outside your window to wake you up, and whether you set it on Matthew 6:33 or not, at 6:33 in the morning, 33 minutes past 6 a.m., doesn't matter. Whenever you set it, think about seek first. And think about seek first being not just at that time when you get that wake-up call, but think about it all through the day. Everything that happens during the day, seek God first. If you receive a phone call from an irate customer. Seek God first. Ask him. Pray silently in your head. God, what must I say? What, give me the words to use here to, so that this person, when they have finished interacting with me, will know that there's something different. You walk into the supermarket and you see someone that is in a bad attitude for some reason or another. Seek God first. How should you interact with that person? A family member calls up and gives you an earful about something. What do you do? Seek God first. Ask God, just like Jehoshaphat did, basically say, God, I don't know what to do here. I have no idea what to do. I need wisdom. I need words that you can give me in this situation. Seek God first for everything. You pull up at a light. Someone honks their horn at you. You want to go, seek God first. All the way through the day, that's your war cry. You start it at the beginning of the day, whenever the beginning of the day is for you. And you carry that war cry through every moment of every day. It helps to actually be in a prayerful state of mind all the way through the day if you keep that at the top of mind. Just seek God first, seek God first, seek God first every time. It's clear that King Jehoshaphat was in the right frame of mind when he received the information about those three armies coming down at him. You know, over and above even the examples that we have in the Old Testament, we have a very strong example in the New Testament, don't we? Our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. He sought God's will first. All the time, everything that happened, he sought his Father's will. He was always saying, I must do my Father's will. Even when he was a little kid and he was in the temple and his mother and father were chasing all over the place to try and find him, he said, I must be about my Father's will. I must be in the temple. When he was in the Garden of Gethsemane and he said, if it's possible for this cup to pass from me, nevertheless, my will, not my will, but your will. I seek God first. I seek the Father first. What great examples we have, brethren, in this book. The instruction book, the instruction manual for these things, you know, these things, these human beings that we are. That is a key instruction. Seek first the kingdom, Matthew 6:33.